Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, this is Olive in WNYC. Once a week, our friends from Gotham has come by and fill us in on the headlines, getting a lot of clicks at Gothamist.com. It has been a huge week for Gothamist. They got a couple scoops. They got a book release. Joining me are Ben Yakas, Jen Carlson, Claire Lampin, and Jake Dopkin. Ben, you got an exclusive here. This is, quote, an exclusive interview with mystery man Dan Smith, who will teach you guitar. Mm. Those posters are everywhere.
Ubiquitous.
Everywhere. I think it's like Starbucks, Dwayne Reed, Dan Smith poster.
Mm-hmm. Every laundromat, every pizzeria, every bodega. He's on the wall there. You're going to see him.
He's real? First
he's
of all,
a real man. He's not a paid spokesman. It's all him. The guy who is making those flyers, the guy who's putting them up every couple of weeks or whatever it is, the guy who's teaching the guitar lessons, that's all one man. He's a one-man DIY shop.
Now, has he ever really given an interview before?
So he's given a couple of interviews, but not in 8 or 9 years. And generally speaking, the interviews have tended to focus on his marketing, how he has developed his flyer campaign, how he's put his name out there. Very few interviews have kind of dived into a more substantial look at who is this guy and what goes into a person putting them out there in this way, and what are his lessons all about as a teacher? Who is he?
Does he make a living?
He does. I think one of the things that was most incredible about meeting him and talking to him was finding out that since the late 90s, he has not had any side gigs. This is a full-time profession for him. He is a guitar teacher. He takes it very seriously. He's a very nice guy, but this is a serious profession for him. He turned what for most people would be like a hobby, something they do on the side here and there, into a full-blown, full-time profession.
I think it's just very simple. Dan Smith will teach you guitar. There's not that much to deviate from that point.
It's true. And, you know, it took him a while. He has played around with the slogans for many years. He's had a lot of different ones. He had one that just said rock guitar with an exclamation point. He had one that said rock and blues guitar. And then more recently, he's put a couple where he's been like, I want to play a sad song for that guitar that's in your closet kind of thing. So he's mixed it up over the years, but he knows that when he hit upon Dan Smith will teach you guitar, that direct appeal with his photo there, because his photo is always on the poster, that is really what has grabbed like the imagination of the public about him. That is what has turned him into this like local cult icon.
Is it the same picture? It's like he hasn't changed that much.
Isn't it like kind of incredible? It's not the same picture. He has changed the picture out regularly, he says. He literally looks exactly like his picture in real life. It seems as though he has not aged. He could be an immortal being as far as I've been able to figure out, because he looks the exact same now as he did 20 years ago.
Do people recognize him?
He does. And he goes out, you know, he's generally speaking, he carries flyers on him, and just in case there's an opportunity for him to put a couple up. And he says that he gets recognized the most when he's putting them up. People will see him doing it, and they'll have that moment where they're of recognition, and they're like, oh my God, you're the guy. You're the guy. And he's very comfortable taking selfies. He really appreciates the fact that anybody knows him at this point, that he's been doing it this long, and that he has this reputation.
It's such a of a time way to do something. You put a poster up, you have the piece of paper you can rip off. Has he ever thought about going online and doing this on the internets?
Well, he has a website, and the website is actually like really well done. It's not like a weird remnant of like the late 90s GeoCities or something, which maybe is what you would kind of expect based
on what
I
was expecting, I have to say.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, the flyer campaign has just become so much a part of his personality and persona that still is the number one way in which he gets students. For whatever reason, the web stuff doesn't quite take off in the same way. It doesn't have that same special something that he has in real life.
So you can actually see Ben's interview, and you can actually hear Dan Smith.
Mm-hmm. He plays a song and everything.
If you go to Gothamist.com. Ben, thank you for sharing your scoop. All right, Jen, you have also a scoop. I'm not going to give the headline because that gives away your scoop, but I will say this. It's about the BQE, and the BQE Rehab plus public radio is like PB&J. People need it. They love it. It goes together. So many people are upset about this rehab. Everybody knows it needs to be done. Something like 14,000 trucks go over the BQE, which is going to crumble at some point. But people do not like what has been proposed. What has changed, Jen? What did you find out?
So the original proposal was kind of insane. It's, you know, bringing a temporary highway to the Brooklyn Heights Promenade, which is an incredibly, you know, popular tourist spot, and also the backyard of some of the most expensive homes in the city. So since they proposed that last September, they've come up with some new plans. Different community groups have come up with their own plans. And this week, Scott Stringer, comptroller here, came up with his own plan. It's sort of like a middle ground. Some people have wanted to do complete teardowns, which has worked in other cities. His plan is to not quite do that. It's to bring a truck-only roadway to one level and then above that have another park. And then above that, you still have the promenade.
So truck level, park, promenade.
Mm-hmm.
So where are we in this process? If somebody says, I don't like that idea, what are people to do?
Yeah, eventually they're going to have to settle on something. So currently, he kind of came up with this plan with the DOT, which is promising, that they were sort of involved a little bit, at least, in this plan. And now they're going to have to go through a review process, not only for this plan, but for all the other plans that have come up that they're contemplating. And that includes like a traffic study and an environmental review process.
So you'll be writing about this again,
yes.
In other words. All right, Jen, thanks so much. Claire, elite NYC parents ensnared in college admission fraud investigation. This one, I hope the story never goes away. this story has captured people's imaginations that people were spending $500,000, $1.2 million to fraudulently get their little darlings, Madison and Justin, into some fancy college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, I think the highest expenditure was $6.5 million.
Holy moly.
Which is wild.
What college do you have to spend that much money to get into?
I don't know. A really good question that's been raised constantly is why not just like buy a library for them?
At least it's a win-win for somebody. Yeah. At least the kids there get a nice library. So we've been hearing about all the movie stars, Felicity, mm-hmm. Huffman, Aunt Becky. That was a heartbreaker. but there are New Yorkers. Obviously, New York is a city mm-hmm. full of bazillionaires. Any bazillionaires we know, or are these people who sort of fly under the radar?
And some people might know them.
Okay.
Our local alleged scammers include Gordon Kaplan, who worked at the very prestigious law firm Wilkie, Farr, and Gallagher. And he allegedly paid quite a bit of money. Let's see, I think it was $75,000 for ACT scores that came up from what I guess he expected his daughter to get, which would have been in low 20s to low 30s. For those who don't remember or never took the ACT, it's scored out of 36 possible points. So it's a significant improvement. And he was actually allegedly caught on tape saying that he has no issues with the moral implications of the scam.
Wow. And yeah, you worked for a law firm, you said?
Yes. That law firm has since placed him on leave.
I'm sure they did.
A leave of absence.
I'm sure it did.
The thing that like breaks my heart about this is I was reading through some of the stories and some of the kids were really trying to work hard to get into the colleges legitimately. And it was the parents who were cutting the corners and then shielding their kids from knowing even that they were doing this on their behalf.
What a betrayal.
Some really definitely knew and sort of reveled in it. I was reading a report right before I came in here about some kids who were in on it and satisfied with themselves. But I mean, definitely not everyone.
Was Olivia Jade in on it?
I don't think we know yet.
Ooh.
But
I need one more New Yorker name.
Okay, I have two.
Just give me a New Yorker
call
name.
Call them out. That's all I want to know.
I have two for you.
Okay.
They're Gregory and Marcia Abbott. So Gregory is the CEO of a food and beverage packaging corporation. And Marcia Abbott, I think, used to head a clothing brand of some kind. But they paid a whopping $125,000 for Sterling ACT and SAT scores to, I think, meet Duke's very high standards.
I see.
And there was a really funny follow-up on that today in the New York Post.
Oh, yes?
About how their son came out of the building to defend them while smoking a blunt. Came out of like a, what is it, like a Fifth Avenue penthouse.
Yes, across the street from
my parents are getting it real bad right now. Also, check out my rap mixtape.
Yeah, he was talking about how everybody has a right to go to college. Yeah.
That 5 stings. Minutes with this kid. 5 minutes, that's all I want. Claire, thank you so much. And Jake, this is great. You have a book, Ask a Native New Yorker, by Jake Dobkin, co-founder of Gothamist.
Thanks for having me on.
Very, very exciting. So, first of all, has there ever been a question someone's asked you that you haven't been able to answer?
No. New Yorkers, Native New Yorkers, we can answer everything. Whether we have a basis in reality for our response or not, we will give you an answer.
So what have been the most popular questions?
This week, the most popular column that we ran was about, like, walking. Like, why are all the tourists walking the wrong way? Because often, like, people email us and they're like, why do you New Yorkers walk so quickly? And of course, the answer is like, we're not, you know, like,
it's you.
Yeah, it's you guys. We don't walk too fast. You guys walk too slow. You know, because they mostly probably grew up in a place where, you know, they got around in cars, and so their walking muscles are probably like really not developed like ours. So of course, naturally, walking everywhere, we walk in a very speedy and, you know, definitive way.
Are you saying it's like an evolutionary thing?
It is.
New Yorkers have just gone to a different level at this point.
Yeah.
Well, evolution is about adaptation.
Yeah,
it's not about who's ever bigger and stronger. Do you adapt to your environment?
We know where we're going, and you know that appears to make us move faster. But of course, like in reality, it's just that like the tourists and the newcomers are just like lost all the time looking at their phone for directions.
So the other one I love is, why do New Yorkers complain so much? Do we have an explanation?
Yeah, I mean, like our complaints allow us to sort of situate ourselves, like, you know, in terms of our authenticity against like other New Yorkers, you know, who's realer, like who has suffered more, you know, because like living here is tough. And of course, the person who suffered the most would be like given the prize of being like the realest native New Yorker. So like we complain constantly to like showcase our position in the city.
I also feel like the things that most like irk us and drive us crazy about living here are also inevitably the things that endear us the most to stay here.
Yeah, it's
of
like
course.
That's the source of like this native like ambivalence, mm-hmm. you know, like where, and to get rid of that psychological tension, like we must spout off and complain all the time or else we'd go crazy.
We have to vent.
Of course.
And finally, what's it like to work in the media? In New York. Sincerely, a would-be writer.
Yeah, 20 years like working as a blogger in New York has like aged me like 85 years. You know what I mean? Like I feel like I'm 120 years old. Would I recommend anyone else follow this crazy career path that we've all taken? Probably not. I mean, it seems like it would be much easier to become like an Instagram influencer, you know, especially if like your parents helped you get into college.
Yeah. Or YouTube vlogger.
Yeah.
Or be the son of some Park Avenue people where you could just hawk your rap albums.
Yeah, that's a lot easier.
Jake Dobkin, you were raised in Brooklyn. You attended Columbia. You co-founded Gothamist. You are the person to write this book, Ask a Native New Yorker.
I was born for this.
Hard-earned advice on surviving and thriving in the big city. Team Gothamist, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Stay with us. We're going to talk about the Universal Hip Hop Museum. Curtis Blow will be here after the break.